Front Page Dramas present Death and the Maiden, one of the most outstanding mystery novels of all time, acclaimed by critics and readers alike as the most highly entertaining and completely baffling piece of mystery fiction to be published in many a year. Death and the Maiden began in last Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. If you haven't already started to read Death and the Maiden, you still have time. A complete resume of the opening chapters will be published in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, together with the second installment of Death and the Maiden. So don't delay. Order today your copy of next Sunday's issue of your Hearst Sunday newspaper with the American Weekly from your local news dealer or carrier boy. Join the millions of readers who will soon be earnestly discussing the puzzling mystery of Death and the Maiden. Now to the story. Grace Hough, a senior at Wentworth College, was a disturbing problem to all who knew her. She has had three violent love affairs, first with Steve Carteris, a senior at Wentworth, then with Dr. Hudnut, the handsome French professor, who jilts her to marry Penelope Gray, the newly arrived dean of women. Her third love affair is with a mysterious figure who writes her a special delivery letter every day. Steve Carteris gives a birthday party at the Amber Club, inviting Grace and her roommate, Lee Lovering, and two sisters, Elaine and Norma Saylor. Grace Hough hates Norma and threatens her on the night of the party. Then at the last minute, Grace refuses to attend the party, saying she has a date. She goes to the Cambridge Theater, which is across the street from the Amber Club. Then things happen. Between the acts, Grace and Dr. Hudnut have a violent quarrel. Steve Carteris mysteriously runs out on his party and disappears. When the play is over, Grace meets her roommate and introduces her to a handsome naval officer. Grace says she is not returning to the college and starts to give Lee, her roommate, three letters to deliver, then changes her mind, returns the letters to her pocketbook, and, after a slanderous attack on Norma Saylor, disappears into the night. Next morning, Lee hurries over to the college infirmary to tell Grace's brother, Jerry, about Grace's mysterious conduct and disappearance. In the middle of the conversation, Lee Lovering receives a phone call from the Dean of Women requesting her presence at once. We find Lee entering the Dean's office.
Good morning, Lee. We've been waiting for you. As I told you on the telephone, Grace Hough did not return to the college last night.
Yes, I know. I was coming over to report it myself.
This is Lieutenant Trant, Lee, of the New York Homicide Squad.
How do you do?
Miss Lovering?
I'm afraid we have some very bad news. You must try not to let it upset you too much. Lieutenant Trant has had a report from Grayville, a small town some 20 miles from here on the Albany Road. The body of a girl has been retrieved from the river there.
Oh.
From the cleaner's mark on the dress, they know the girl comes from the Wentworth neighborhood.
What?
We cannot, of course, be certain that it is Grace, but Lieutenant Trant wants someone to go with him to Grayville to try and make an identification. As you know, apart from her brother Gerald, Grace has no immediate relatives, and Dr. Barker says it is impossible for Gerald to be moved from the infirmary at the present time. Since you were with Grace last night, since you are her roommate, her oldest friend...
I'll go. But what makes you think it is Grace, Lieutenant Trant?
How was your friend dressed last night?
In pink. A pink satin dress and a cream-colored fur coat.
And she was wearing a little diamond brooch on her dress.
Yes. And this girl was... Was she drowned?
No, this girl was not drowned. She was killed by a severe blow on the back of her head.
Then it's not... It couldn't be suicide.
I'm afraid that's hardly possible, Miss Lovering. In fact, it's almost certain that she was deliberately murdered. Suppose, Miss Lovering, while we're driving over to Grayville, you tell me a little of the dead girl's background. You were very close to her, I understand.
Yes. Our families were neighbors. Grace and her brother Jerry and I all grew up together in New Hampton.
The Huffs of New Hampton. Oh, yes, I remember now. Their family had some very serious financial troubles, and their father, Gerald P. Huff, didn't he commit suicide?
That's right. He was president of a large insurance company.
Yes, I remember. He speculated with trust funds and then committed suicide rather than face the inevitable exposure and attendant scandal.
That's right. Her mother, too, died of the worry and shock.
Yes.
When the estate was settled, there was nothing left to Grace and Jerry except the insurance for their education and Grace's life insurance.
Grace's life insurance?
Yes, which they would have most certainly been obliged to surrender before the next premium became due.
Oh, I see. And Grace...
Well, Grace had a nervous breakdown after her father's death and missed a term at Wentworth. When she came back, she was, well, different.
Well, how do you mean, different?
She was more interested in men than ever before, more eager for life. Well, it was as though she realized she'd missed a lot and was desperately anxious to catch up on what she'd missed.
And the men?
First, there was Steve Carteris. He's a senior. She had a sort of mild romance with him, but he was, well, the playboy type, and what happened to that romance, I never found out.
I see.
But Grace soon fell madly in love with Dr. Robert Hudnut. He's our French professor.
Oh.
I don't think he ever took her seriously, for he was very much interested in our dean of English, Miss Parrish. But he finally married the dean of women, Miss Penelope Gray, whom you met today.
Oh, I see.
Well, it took Grace a long time to get over this affair, but she apparently did. Well, she began getting a flood of special delivery letters. I never knew until last night who they were from, until I met the young naval officer who was with her at the theater. He's a tall, well-built man with a mass of handsome red hair. He was only introduced to me as David, and we didn't even get a chance to speak with each other. She drove off with him after the theater.
Oh, I see. Well, here we are, Miss Lovering. Now, it's in that door.
Oh.
Bear up. It'll soon be over.
Oh.
Howdy, Lieutenant. Didn't take you long. Got her inside here. Doctor made a thorough examination. We've got her dressed just as she was when we found her. This lady here come for the identification?
Yes. This is her roommate, Miss Lovering.
Howdy, miss. She'll just go right in here. There you are, miss. Is that her?
It is Grace Huff, isn't it?
Yes. But it's the wrong coat. Neither she nor anyone I know ever owned a coat like that.
Oh, thank you. You needn't say any more now. Keep it for the inquest.
It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when Lee Lovering and Lieutenant Trant arrived back at Wentworth College. They went straight to the home of the Hudnuts. Some of the members of the faculty were assembled.
I'm so glad you're back, Lee, dear. I don't have to ask you about the identification.
I'm afraid the girl was Grace Huff. Here, Miss Lovering, you'd better sit down. You've had a trying ordeal.
Yes, Lee, dear. Do sit down and make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
I have some tea ready. It'll do you good.
On the way back from Grayville, Miss Lovering has been telling me about Grace Huff's movements last night. The girls went to a party at the Amber Club. She's told me how they arranged a little plot to make you think they were at the theater by running across the street during the intermissions and mingling with the crowds. Miss Lovering, I believe you said you went over to the theater at the first intermission and saw Grace Huff. Was she alone?
No, she wasn't alone. She was with Dr. Hudnut. They were talking about the play. I saw her again between the second and third acts, and after the show was over, I met her with a young naval officer. That's when she was going to give me 3 letters to deliver for her, but changed her mind and put them back in her purse.
From your infinite store of information, Miss Lovering, you couldn't tell me who those 3 letters were for.
Well, I only saw the top one. It was addressed to her brother, and he got it. It was delivered at the infirmary last night.
Thank you. In spite of certain discrepancies, the disappearance of the fur coat, for example, the discovery of the body so far away either from New York or Wentworth, and Grace's behavior with regard to those letters, this case looks pretty straightforward, doesn't it?
Exactly. I regret more than I can say that the matter of those frequent special delivery letters was not brought to my attention. Grace was a difficult girl. I've been worried for some time. If I'd known anything of that sort had been going on, particularly if I'd known she was so secretive about it.
Oh, so that's the way you see it, Mrs. Hudnut. An ardent love affair by correspondence. Probably secret meetings with this mysterious, unidentified naval officer. And some embarrassing relationship grows up which has to be severed drastically. In other words, you believe Grace Huff was murdered by the naval officer.
Oh, of course I wouldn't dream of accusing anyone at the present time. But this man was to have driven her home to college. She never returned. He's not yet come forward to give an account of himself. I feel it's of vital importance for the police to locate him.
Yes, so do I. I have already telephoned headquarters. They're bending every effort to locate them. It shouldn't prove too difficult. After all, there cannot have been many red-haired naval officers in New York last night. There's one very important point about these special delivery letters your roommate received, Miss Lovering. Do you happen to know if she was in the habit of keeping them?
Oh, no, no. I think she destroyed them as soon as she got them. Except the one that came last night, and I saw her put that in the pocket of the fur coat she borrowed from me.
The coat which has vanished into thin air.
Yes.
How about the rest of you? You were all at the theater last night. Have any of you anything to offer? Did you see Miss Huff, Dean Apple?
No, indeed. I never saw Miss Huff at the theater at all. Of course, Dr. Hutton and I did meet the girl yesterday in rather embarrassing circumstances, but I think Hutton is better qualified to talk about it than I.
Well, Dr. Hutton?
Since Apple has seen fit to refer to the incident, I prefer to have him tell the story in his own way.
Very well. Hudnett and I are on a college building committee. We discussed making use of an old stone quarry a little way along the New York Road. Yesterday, I took a walk in that direction, ran into Hudnett. He said he was there to look the place over. And that's where we saw Miss Huff. He was there in the quarry, sitting on a pile of rocks. She seemed to be crying her eyes out. Apparently, she'd been talking to Hudnett earlier.
I think Lieutenant Trant will get a more accurate impression if I take up the story at this point. Dean Apple has painted a very colorful picture. But he's right in the essence. Grace Huff was crying, and in a way, I was responsible.
Am I to understand, Hudnett, that you had an appointment in this quarry with Grace Huff?
Very definitely not. When I wish to talk to my students, I have a perfectly adequate office for that purpose.
Yes, yes, sure.
Miss Huff followed me to the quarry on her own initiative. I can only presume that the nearness of the graduation examinations had made her a trifle unstable. Certainly what she had to say was distinctly neurotic. She had brought with her the last two papers she had done for me, on both of which I had given her an F.
Meaning failure?
At one time, Grace Huff was a promising student, ready for the honors course. But recently her work had gone off badly. That's what she came to speak to me about. She demanded to know why I had given her low grades. She accused me of discriminating against her. I did my best to assure her that the low grades were the result of the poor quality of her work. She became very difficult. When I realized that my presence seemed only to aggravate her, I left her. That is why she was crying when Dean Apple came to the quarry.
Did Grace Huff know that you were going to be at the theater last night?
Why, I may have mentioned the fact to her. I really couldn't say.
But you did speak to her alone during the first act intermission.
Yes, I did speak to Grace Huff in the first intermission.
I see. And she continued the scene that she had started at the quarry.
She did not. We talked of the play, the translation of a certain line.
Well, just as a matter of interest, Dr. Hudson, what was the line she asked you to translate?
Why, I'm afraid I don't recall. My memory for such things is not at all retentive. I think Miss Lovering overheard our conversation. Perhaps she can tell you.
Well, Miss Lovering, how's your memory? Can you oblige?
Me? Why, yes, I think it was a passage that went something like this. C'est venu tout entière à sa proie attachée.
I'm afraid, Miss Lovering, you'll have to take pity on an ignorant policeman and tell me what it means in English.
Well, I'm not sure, but I suppose the idea is this. Venus clinging like grim death to her quarry.
Who killed Grace Huff? It's a baffling question that is never answered until the final paragraphs of Death and the Maiden, the most puzzling piece of mystery fiction ever written. You'll find the second exciting installment in next week's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you at no extra cost as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Order your copy today and follow every exciting installment of Death and the Maiden every week.